Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And he swings, hits it high and deep and gone. Still going back. Oh! Out of here. Welcome to the big leagues.
Deep to center field and it is gone.
Wow, his first big league swing is going to be a grand slam home run. Swing and drive. Mountain right. Welcome to the show.
Saturday edition of the Call Up, and we have a fun one today because we're going to be talking about some standout pitchers over the last week or so, and then we have an interview with Cardinals prospect Thomas Tajaisi, who Jack got to talk to when he was out in Indy. And Jack, I don't want to give you credit for this, but pretty much since you guys have had this conversation, Tajaisi's been going pretty crazy. Of course, a top 100 prospect for us, right on the top 60 range, I think. We're probably a little bit higher, but I think you'll start to see why when you hear from him, but also when you start to look at how he's been swinging it the last week or so.
It was a great conversation, and it was a conversation that we were having when he was sub 200, and it was like eight games in, sure, but I mean, like at the end of the day, this guy was, you know, kind of slow out of the gates, but he was still so calm, so level. He gives off the Southern California vibe, and you will totally pick that up. And this guy, I mean, he's been surrounded by some really talented teammates, and this guy is exceptionally talented in his own right. He talks about the defensive versatility, too. He's playing a lot of short right now, and he was not doing that last year. So we get into that, and then his natural feel for elevating, he was a very fun conversation.
Yeah, and we'll dive a little bit more into what he's been doing lately when we lead right into that interview, but just a few things that he has been doing well as of late that have him, you know, already up over an 800 OPS. That's the crazy thing about the early parts of the season is you can feel like you're off to such a slow start and then you have two good games and all of a sudden your numbers are right back where they need to be. So we'll talk a little bit about the nice stretch that Tajaisi has had when we lead into that conversation. But right now we have some pitchers to talk about, and a couple of them were guys that we had discussed briefly or actually a couple more in depth on the bonus episode that I just put out, but I did want to get into a couple of those guys as well as some others who we haven't given a ton of airtime to, and we probably should based on the subsequent start they had. Like, there was one that was good and you're like, okay, and then they have another that's pretty good and you're like, all right, and then once it's the third, even if they weren't on your radar, you got to circle back now and talk about those guys. So there's a few of those that we are going to talk about here. Who do you want to start with, Jack? Because we kind of have a wide range. And also, before I forget, we're mostly going to talk about guys that are further off because Monday's episode is going to be a kind of imminent big leaguer type of episode. So we're going to be talking about a lot of those upper level arms, several bats that we think could be getting an opportunity at the big leagues pretty soon, and then some that may be blocked and try to assess that situation. So these guys are mostly going to be either lower levels or just guys that, you know, we know are not really imminent big leaguers.
So three starts, 15 innings, five hits, no earned runs, 24 punchouts, and four walks. Aram, who is George Klassen?
Yeah, so Klassen's become a very popular, I think, breakout and I think just like helium name because he was viewed as kind of a project when the Phillies took him, and I think in the sixth round out of Minnesota, didn't make his debut last year. What was it, seventh?
Sixth round. Yep.
Sixth
Minnesota.
You know, I think he didn't make his debut last year because he was banged up and then emerges this year healthy first and foremost. But secondly, he's averaging 97 with his fastball and it's 97 with run and it's a heavy pitch. So he's just been overpowering low A hitters with it so far. You mentioned the numbers. I mean, just dominating. And I think we'll probably see him get bumped up to high A relatively soon here. I see why a lot of people are excited about him. And again, when you're averaging 97 with ride and run like that, like, it's really impressive. The curveball, when he's commanding it, looks like it has a chance to be disgusting. There is a lot of effort in the delivery. And that's something that I'm a little bit concerned about. You know, when he starts to face more challenging competition, they start to grind out ABs more. You can't overpower just with the fastball quite as much. You know, how consistently are you going to command those secondaries, those two breaking balls? And usually when you have those higher effort deliveries, it's a little bit tougher to command those breaking balls. So just something to monitor. But so far, you know, just with the fastball, being able to go back to that when the breaking balls aren't there, pretty much any time he falls behind, he just can throw two, three fastballs in a row. And it's such a good pitch for him that he's just blowing it by hitters. It's really impressive. There's a lot to like. There's a lot to be excited about. But I do think that there's still a fair amount of reliever risk that may not be shown in low A right now, because he can pretty much just give you the glove flip fastball and overpower guys, which is a testament to him, but also is something to monitor as he gets up to high A, double A.
He's also 22 years old in low A. And, you know, you wonder about the level of not buy-in from the Phillies, because they're clearly bought in, but you wonder about the level of babying that will follow. Because they took a high school first round pick in Painter and shot him up through the minor leagues like a rocket ship, because he passed at every level across six start spans. So they did that with a 19-year-old first round pick, a 22-year-old sixth round pick. You think you can cut that start number from six to like three? I would expect him to go up at any point to high A. And then if he's killing in high A for four starts, you could see him go up. I think this is a guy that, like, the Phillies will have no problem pushing. And will he hit an innings limit at some point? Yeah, I'm sure. But, like, let him get as far up with success in the minor leagues as humanly possible. Because, you know, frankly, like, it feels like they're playing with house money with a guy like George Klassen.
Absolutely. And I think it's definitely good scouting success already. But you look at the velocity, even in college as well, when the numbers were not as good, I think, as the stuff may indicate. There were several outings where he was averaging pretty much 97, 98. He had an 105 pitch outing where he's averaging 98 as well. And he gave up some runs, you know, in those games. So I know it. I'm just interested to see how different he is from that pitcher last year. And I know he was a little banged up, but I think there's clearly some more pitchability to him now. And I think there's a little bit better fastball command and characteristics. I know when I see like the community start to like latch onto a guy, like the prospect, the fantasy community, whatever. And then it becomes this like competition of like, who's the most in on this guy. And then we end up kind of pushing a guy maybe a little bit too much, a little bit too early. And I think that might be what happens with Klassen a little bit. I think Austin Charles was that perfect example, who, by the way, is swinging it pretty well right now in the Royal system. I think Klassen could get up to high A and do more of the same. And then, you know, we can kind of put that to bed a little bit. But I do think that if the secondaries aren't there, that fastball may not play quite the same way against better competition. That said, it's an easy plus heater. He gets a lot of ground balls, and that helps a lot too, and takes some pressure off of the swing and miss with the secondaries. But I think that curveball could be really damn good, and we're seeing flashes of that already.
Yeah. Another guy, as we jump to the Cardinals system, actually, 23-year-old, fourth-round pick out of Stanford last year, left-hander Quinn Matthews. And if I'm not mistaken, Paul Skeens was second in all of college baseball last year in innings pitched to Quinn Matthews, who threw 124 and two-thirds innings.
Yeah.
How many pitches did he throw in that super regional? Or was it a regional where he threw like 150 pitches or something?
It was 156, if I'm not mistaken. If I remember correctly, it was 156.
So this cat was a pitchability four-year lefty at Arizona that threw 156 pitches in an outing.
Against Stanford, right?
For Stanford. But he was a fourth-round pick of St. Louis. He didn't throw it all last year, understandably so, because he threw 124 innings by the end of June. But so far this year in low A, as a 23-year-old, so he is, you know, older than the average age pitcher in low A, 12 innings, four hits, only earned run has come on a homer, 25 punchouts in 12 innings, nine walks. This is not the Quinn Matthews that was at Stanford whatsoever. What's different?
So this was one of the texts I was most excited to send you, because I knew you wouldn't believe it. Quinn Matthews was just a good four-year college pitcher. You know, he was definitely lefty, someone that had some professional intrigue. And you know, he was always assumed to be going in the first five rounds because he's a high-floor lefty that you figure could potentially be a five-starter for you. But at the very least, it's just a good depth arm to have in your organization. And you know the Cardinals love those types. They draft the elevated versions of those pitchers in the first round all the time. We saw it with Michael McGreevy. But what shocks me with Matthews is, you know, he emerges this year looking like a totally different arm. He was averaging 91 to 92. You know, some outings he would average like 92 and a half. And I understand that a lot of his outings for Stanford, he was going 115, 120 pitches, and then 156 the one time as well. But even in the shorter spurts, like we had 65, 66 pitch outings from him where he's averaging 92 and a half. So far this year, he's averaging 95 on the fastball, and he's touching 97. So that's 2 to 3 ticks up. And it's not like he's throwing 30 pitch outings, right? It's not like we're taking a guy that was throwing 113 pitches and now he's throwing 30 pitches. We have samples of him throwing 65 pitch outings in college where he's averaging 92. Now, 74 pitches the first time out averages 94.2 miles per hour. 78 pitches the second time out this year averages 95.1. 83 pitches the third time out and averages 95 on the dot. So this is an uptick, clearly. The other side of it was like, okay, he's 6'4", he's a lefty. There's an uptick, but like, what does the shape look like? You know, is this just going to kind of be a stock fastball? No, it's not. It's a below average release because of the 3/4 release point. He gets pretty down on the mound. He gets average extension and, you know, a 5'6" release height, 18 inches of vert. That's above average characteristics. So you have above average characteristics, above average velocity from a 6'4" lefty. No wonder he's blowing it by guys. He is doing it in low A. It's important to note. For whatever reason, him and Chase Davis are still teammates in low A. But this is a different Quinn Matthews, man. The other aspect of it is the changeup was viewed as kind of like his one above average pitch that, you know, that may translate well to professional ball. He still has that changeup and it's been good for him, but he's added this mid-80s slider that is really playing up from that release point. And now you've got a true three pitch mix with the fastball being better, the slider being a legitimate pitch and still having that changeup. Quinn Matthews is a real prospect, man. Like this has to be my biggest surprise in the early, and we'll probably do an episode on that too. Like biggest surprises. It's too early right now, but pitching, you can kind of dive into it a little bit earlier. This is my biggest surprise. And judging on your reaction to my text to you, I'd imagine that this is one of your biggest surprises as far too.
You know what this is? So cross-sport analogy, I'm going to football. I feel like I usually go to basketball, but I'm going to football now. You remember when Stetson Bennett got invited to New York as a Heisman finalist? It was a culmination in his career. Like, he was not one of the three, four best players in America that year. But he was, you know, like, oh, yeah, the Stetson Bennett story. It's great. It's like if Stetson Bennett got drafted and then showed up to camp looking like Anthony Richardson in terms of, like, a skill set. This is a 180 from who Quinn Matthews was. Pitchability lefty, fastball changeup. And the fastball wasn't good at Stanford. And now he's like, I'm going to outstuff the shit out of you. It's insane. Like, this is a totally different human being that I think the Cardinals drafted in the fourth round. And he is fitting the bill of the modern pitcher now more than he really ever had.
I'm pretty sure he didn't exceed 95 miles per hour last year, at least with the pitches I'm able to track. And he's averaging 95 miles an hour now. Like, think about it. That's crazy to not even top at what you're now averaging within 8 months. My only concern is, you know, sometimes you see that big uptick and that's a lot for the body to handle quickly. The good news is that Quinn Matthews overall has already put his body, I think, to the test. And like, you know, he was throwing softer, but he's throwing 156 pitches. I'm not a doctor, but I'd imagine 95 miles an hour, but it's managed workload at 70 to 80 pitches. Probably offsets. I don't know. But like, anytime you see that big uptick, I always, you know, get a little bit nervous about the workload, but you know, you just can't live scared anymore. I think that's more than clear. That said, like, I am interested to see how they manage his workload after what happened last year. Now with an uptick, you know, I feel like we see these stories where guys have this uptick, they look amazing. And then unfortunately, you know, something happens. So I hope that the Cardinals are somewhat cautious with him, but it seems like he's already stretched out to 80 pitches, and that's fine. I'm just interested to see what his workload limitations may be, because they might look at 120 innings, like you said, one of the most used pitchers in college baseball and say, oh, well, we can get him back up there. I think they can, but I hope they don't push it too far beyond that because I think they may have something here. The one thing that is interesting is that I think because the stuff is so much louder, he's still working to harness it. But we saw what happens when he harnesses it. Second start of the year was 5 innings, 1 hit, no runs, no walks, 11 Ks. But the other two outings are a combined 7 innings, 14 Ks, 2 runs, 1 earned, but 9 walks. So just something to monitor. I think Quinn Matthews is still figuring out how to harness his newfound electric stuff. But I'm intrigued, and I think this is a guy that may be the biggest climber in the Cardinals farm system this year if he keeps it up.
Absolutely. And like, I wish I had a better way to build off of what you were saying about increased velo and like, you know, hopefully the workload, it kind of offsets, but like, we don't know. He might blow out. He might not. Like that's the point that I've gotten to now where it's like, oh, he's throwing harder. Yeah, he might blow out, but like he's throwing less pitches. Yeah, he might not blow out, but he still might blow out. We just don't know, which sucks, yeah. But welcome to baseball and welcome to pitching in 2024. Ben Kuderna with the Kansas City Royals is the next guy that we wanted to bring up. 3 starts have spent 14 2/3. So he's being pushed a little bit as a 21-year-old in high A. 14 2/3, 2 earned runs, has punched out 19 and walked 5. He had an excellent start last time out. Kuderna is a guy that I know you really liked right away. Second round pick in 2021. Last year, he was so-so, like 108 innings from a 20-year-old between low A and high A. But he really got hit hard in his 40 innings in high A. What are you seeing now that's different from him that might have been a source of struggle for him in high A last year?
Yeah, I think just a little bit more confidence. You know, he's always had the stuff. I was surprised to see him get hit the way that he did last year. I understand the fastball is not great, and we're going to talk a lot about that in the Eminent Big Leaguers episode on Monday, especially when we talk about Sam Roberts. And you know how you can manage that, but Kuderna's fastball is definitely better than Sam's, but it is pretty stock, and I think that was the problem for him, was trying to fill up the zone enough, falling behind in counts, having to go to that fastball more, was resulting in him getting hit pretty hard. Whereas the slider and the changeup are really good pitches for him, and I think our big league offerings both could potentially be well above average to plus. So it's okay if my fastball is average, I have 2 above average to plus offerings. The difference maker at that point is command. And the fastball is good enough to where if he hits his spots, I think he can be successful. I think that's exactly what he's doing. He's getting ahead now a little bit more, and it's allowing him to use both of those secondaries and sequence a little bit more effectively too. I think what he's also seeing is that, and we talked about this on the show a lot, Jack, and I'm curious what you're seeing in AAA, but right on right or left on left, same-handed changeups are such an underutilized weapon, because traditionally it was just always, oh, you don't want to throw a changeup to the same-handed guy. Well, the hitter that you're facing knows that. And when your fastball is not good, if I'm a right-handed hitter, I know he's got a good slider, but I'm pretty much, you know, just approached to shutting down anything that starts middle away and zeroing in on a fastball, not going to miss that. And, you know, if he locates 3 sliders, you tip your cap, but you're able to kind of cut it down to 2 pitches. Are you seeing more like same-handed changeups? Paul Skeens doesn't count, but are you seeing more same-handed changeups in the upper minors? Because I think that's a trend we're going to see in baseball continue to change. And I think it's a very archaic way of thinking that same-handed changeups can't work.
Yeah, I agree with you. What I will say is the guys that you see throw same-handed changeups have an arsenal that mandates that they do. So like, I just watched Simeon Woods Richardson throw a couple of same-handed changeups, and he's working on that slider, and the slider actually looks pretty good. It's firmer and it's in the 87, 88 range, building off that 93 that he's got. So like, that's how he would really attack right on right. But obviously a changeup has been a huge part of his arsenal, and he's still using it. So a lot of guys that I'd say like their go-to secondary pitch is a changeup, they will go to it, but you still have like kind of the cookie cutter type guys that are same handed. They're going fastball breaking ball, and then opposite handed, they're going fastball changeup. What I will say is I think you're going to see more same handed changeups because there's more of an emphasis placed on changeup movement now than ever before. Before, it was really a taste breaker when it came to separation of velocity. And it was, okay, I throw my fastball at 92. I've got a changeup at 85. it's going to mimic, it's going to look similar. Now you can view a changeup as a pitch that dives under a barrel. And is that a grip thing? I don't, everybody's been like, we've been throwing circle changeups since like what, the 1940s, I'm sure, 1950s, but there are different iterations of the changeup. Like you look at Chris Paddock and the Vulcan changeup, right? Like there are a lot of people that have figured out ways to get horizontal movement, get vertical drop on their change. And I think the more we lean into that, the movement profile of the changeup, the more you're going to see same-handed changeups.
Well, and especially like you talk about the way the arsenal can kind of, you know, cater to that. The thing is Kuna, again, the fastball is not great, especially to righties. Like righties hit the fastball well and historically have. So if they're looking fastball kind of out over the plate and slider away, and you start to get them looking out away, especially when they're behind in the count as a righty, you're going to start looking for anything working away from you. And then all of a sudden he buries that changeup with 16 inches of horizontal down and in on you. It's going to catch you off guard. And that's just all he needs. That's all he needs as just like a change of pace weapon, especially in a battle. If a guy's fouling a bunch off and you just need another way to put him away. I think a perfect example of this is he's thrown 15 changeups right on right so far this year. Six have resulted in strike three.
There you go.
So, I mean, that's impressive through three starts. Like it's not like he's throwing it a ton, but he brings it out at the right time now. And before it was, I can't put him away. He keeps spoiling the slider, hoping I can blow 95 by him. Sometimes I will. Sometimes it's a home run or whatever. And now it's, I've got this other, you know, kind of ace in my back pocket, and I can drop this in there when a guy is on my fastball slider sequence. That's all I think he really needed.
So that's the thing. You want to keep it in your back pocket too. You don't want to deploy it enough for it to become predictable and part of the scout. You want it to be that sneak attack pitch, that element of surprise pitch. And that's what some of the best pitchers in baseball do. Like, notice Spencer Strider showcased a good changeup last year. He only threw it, 5-6% of the time? Like, every great pitcher has a taste breaker. And even if it's a good taste breaker, they still keep it in the back pocket as a taste breaker. Because if you throw your taste breaker too much, then it becomes part of your arsenal. It just becomes part of the scout, and guys will be ready for it. So I think in the early goings especially, he may be benefiting from it not really being part of the scout. And it's like, where the hell did that come from?
Yep. And it's a great pitch. So that's the other aspect too. Even though it's not his best, it's a good pitch that should be thrown more, even right on right. And I think that's been a big part of his success. So good times with the Royals right now. You know, you look at just what they're doing at the big league level. You know, you start to look at the system and some of the way that these guys are developing. And now I'm excited for Kansas City Royal fans. And hopefully Mazzucato can get, you know, rolling and see how he does. And the rest of the farm system, Blake Mitchell's been swinging it pretty well out of the gate. That's a guy that we'll check in on in a little bit, but it's been cool to see what he's doing. You know, we love Ramon Ramirez. So exciting days, I think, to be a Kansas City Royals fan.
Would you say exciting days to be an Atlanta Braves fan too?
I mean, that's every day.
Yeah. So like, why do you need Owen Murphy to be this good? Owen Murphy with the Atlanta Braves, three starts, 17 innings, three earned, punched out 27, walked six in 17 innings of work. Owen Murphy really struggled last year with a lot of hard contact, and he was punching out a good number of guys. He really wasn't walking many people. 89 and two-thirds last year between low A and high A. 113 punchouts, 32 walks. But it resulted in a 4.7 ERA because he was getting hit and hit hard. He's limiting that hard contact right now. And that is that what has him really taken off?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. And we had him as a breakout guy in the written article. I added a few other breakout pitching prospects that we put out in justbaseball.com. And Murphy was one of the late additions. I think it's just a little bit of everything. So he's a guy that it's low 90s fastball with crazy vert. I mean, he's getting 19 to 20 inches of vert from a 5-6 release height. Like, that's elite. It's that much vert from that release height is pretty much adjacent to Christian Javier. Javier throws it harder, and that's why he's, you know, had some of the best stretches we've seen out of some big league pitchers in the last few years. Of course, that profile with a high IVB fastball and a lack of third pitch comes with volatility. But we know when Javier's on, it's crazy. But what would you say is the most important variable for pitchers like Christian Javier?
Command, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, because you're a two-pitch guy, you're a fastball invisible type where it's just getting crazy ride that is beyond what hitters are used to. But if you're always working from behind, hitters will just start to try to cheat for that thing. And it becomes a little bit more.
Then you're forced to kind of tug it down too. Like, you want to be able to climb the ladder over the course of an at-bat. So I'm actually going to get more specific fastball command over anything.
Yes. Well, and here's the thing is, and I think if your fastball commands, I think it's still both though, because if I don't respect your slider right now, even though it's a good pitch, but you're not locating it, like when Javier is not locating that slider, you could get by with the pinpoint fastball command, but what are the odds that your fastball command is going to be, you know, pinpoint?
Yeah.
When on those days where the slider's not there. So I think it's a combination of both. The reason why Javier survives is, like, even when the slider's not there, is because of that fastball command. But I think it's also, you got to respect the slider so much. And Owen Murphy this year, 76% strike rate on the slider. You got to respect that pitch then, because not only is it a good pitch and it's pretty nasty, but he's able to spot it. He's able to throw it early in counts, later in counts. You know, he's going to mix it up. And then the other thing is, he's a half tick harder this year. And I think that makes a big difference when you're 20 inches avert from a 5-6 release. So now he's averaging 91, but I think getting a little bit more and kind of pops of a bit more velocity wise, and the command overall being better. It felt like last year just was a lot of pitching from behind. And I feel like he wasn't elevating the fastball as much as he should. So I don't even know if he knew what his, like, strengths truly, truly were. I don't know if he leaned into it enough, where now you're seeing him set it up well. You kind of mentioned the fastball command. That's where it really comes in, is like knowing how your fastball plays, how to set it up well. And so far, I mean, it's been an awesome pitch for him. Opponents overall are hitting .131, but 30% chase rate on his fastball, 15% swinging strike rate. And he's just filling up the zone or just right above it, which is just what you love to see. And he's also got a little bit more confidence in that taste breaking curveball in the mid 70s. To give a third speed and a third look. Just looks like a more complete and more well-rounded pitcher. And he always had the things that you can't really, really teach. And now you're seeing what happens when he has a little bit more velocity and a little bit more command. That last outing against Asheville, where he went 5 innings, 11 Ks, 2 earned runs, he averaged closer to 92 on the heater, which, you know, he had not really done much, only a couple starts last year where he was averaging more than 91. And those were mostly shorter spurts. So I think the uptick in velocity with that shape is huge. And then just the confidence. He just seems like he's starting to realize what his stuff can do at the top of the zone.
So the big question, are they going to AJ him? Because AJ started in Rome last year and he was great in Rome. And then he went to Mississippi and he was great in Mississippi. And then he got the call. I think it was like one start in Gwinnett and then he went up. I don't think they should. I don't think they will. Because he's a first round guy and he really wasn't overwhelmingly successful in 23, but hell, man, like, AJ wasn't that great in 2022. So I wonder where they're at, especially with Waldrop struggling in AA and with AJ struggling in AAA.
Yeah, I would think they don't. I think they were fast tracking AJ because of the pitch mix. He had so many different offerings. I think they thought that it would translate to the big leagues, and just the command held him back. Whereas an Owen Murphy, like, if he's not ready at 60% fastball usage, it's going to be bombs away. And I don't know if they want to do that to him. So I think they'll see it a little bit differently there with him. That said, nothing would shock me, because they might look at that fastball and say, hey, it could get swings and misses. Those vert guys, they usually translate decently well. I hope they don't, because he is finally, I think, really settling in. And I think we can see him in double relatively soon. But I don't want to stunt this momentum and this development. There's just clearly a lot better feel to pitch here that he is building, and a lot more confidence within the zone. You don't want to stifle that by Pete Alonso clipping a fastball that's well located at the top of the zone, and now all of a sudden he's nibbling again.
Right, I'm totally with you. One more guy, and maybe the most successful for last at this point. Happy 23rd birthday, Adam Mazur. The former Iowa Hawkeye was born on April 20th, 2001. So happy birthday to you. Padres right-hander has been dynamite in San Antonio at this point. Through three starts, 16 innings, eight hits, one run has come on a solo homer, 16 Ks, two walks in 16 innings. This is a guy that you can just shove up there, I think.
Yeah, don't tell AJ Preller that though. Like then he'll be there. Like
he's already seeing it. I guarantee you he's gonna do it like next week.
I mean, but he is. I'm with you. Look, I don't think he's gonna miss a ton of bats at the big league level, but I think he'll miss enough. He fills up the zone and he's gonna give you a good chance at a quality start every fifth day. And I think we're seeing that. I think we're also seeing that he's just way too polished for double A. The thing is like this is another guy that I just wouldn't really want to put in the PCL because the whole point of why he's so good, I think, is the confidence in the zone with several different pitches. 70% strike rate on the fastball, 77% strike rate on the slider, 68% strike rate on the curveball, and a 75% strike rate on the changeup. He is filling it up and mixing it up. And, you know, you send a guy to the PCL, and again, you make some good pitches that get out, and you're kind of like, ugh. That's frustrating, right? And maybe can breed some bad habits. I think there's no need to move him from double. And I think when he gets the call up, it could probably just come straight from double A. I mean, the efficiency is what stands out to me. I think we talked about it briefly a week ago where like he almost had a Maddox over two starts where in 109 pitches, he was able to cover 11 innings. That's all we were saying like almost more important. Impressive than a Maddox. Obviously, it's more impressive to do it in one outing, but that's never going to be allowed in the minor leagues. So they give you two outings where you're only able to throw, let's assume he was capped at about 55 pitches and he got one extra in there. To be able to compile 11 innings when you're being capped at 50 pitches each outing is pretty crazy. So to get 5 innings in and 56 pitches and then get 6 innings in the next time out with 53 pitches is absurd. But also the command has just been absurd. Again, I wonder how much whiff there's going to be at the big league level, but I think there's clearly enough. He's striking out batters at a 30% clip so far. He's getting plenty of in-zone whiff on the fastball, which is interesting because he's been sitting 95. That goes back to last year, but the shape kind of left a little bit to be desired. Seems like he's getting a little bit more life now. I mean, Jack, do you feel like Mazur could be a good big league starter this year?
Yes, absolutely, yes. In the minor leagues. So in college, like this guy had a 4.25 ERA and, you know, 182 innings, right? So he's lowered that to a 2.49. But I want to go to walk rate in college versus the minor leagues. He was walking 3.5 hitters per nine in college. What do you think his walk percentage is in the minor leagues? He's thrown 112 minor league innings.
In the entire minor leagues walk percentage?
He's punching out 23.5% of hitters.
I'm going to guess it's like 6%.
4.2%. Sure. In 112 innings, he's walked 19. He's seen 448 hitters. He's walked 19 of them. This guy has discovered something about his confidence in the strike zone, like you were saying, that he did not have in the Big Ten. Like, it's one thing if you don't have it in the SEC or even the ACC. But the Big Ten is like the third or fourth. I'd say probably the fourth best conference in America when it comes to college baseball. If you don't have that confidence in the strike zone and you get to the minor leagues and you get shoved to high A and double right away and you open in double and you're walking 1.5 hitters per nine in your first 112 minor league innings, you've got some shit to you. And like that guy's going to survive with San Diego.
The stuff has ticked up since college with the deep pitch mix and kind of the path that you set out. You know who I kind of thought of?
There are a couple guys that tick up. Who are you thinking of though?
It kind of reminds me of Tanner Bibee. Uh-huh. And I'm not saying he's going to be quite as good because I think Bibee has, you know, better fastball characteristics and, had better command in college and then just really saw that tick up. But I do see some similarities to Bibee there where I think, you know, he can just be that guy that sees the uptick across his entire arsenal. The pitchability was there. He just didn't maybe trust the stuff as much. And now he's just filling up the zone with all these different pitches that have gotten better and just knows how to pitch. I do see some similarities with Bibee there, which I think, you know, would bode really well for Mazur. I think it's a little bit of a lighter example. Like, I think it's like 70% of a Bibee, but if you're 70% of a Bibee, you're a good big league starter.
Yeah, 160 and two-thirds innings at this point for Bobby. He's got a 3.19 in the big league.
Yeah. One last note on Mazur. He's given up three extra base hits this year. One is a home run to Caleb Roberts of the D-backs. 91.5 miles per hour, and it got out 367 feet. The other is a ground ball via Josh Lester at 82 miles per hour at negative 12 degrees. That was a double. And then another double at 98 miles an hour from Jordan Brewer. So that ball was actually hit hard. But that's the craziest part too. Three extra base hits, and pretty much none of them were really hard hits. This is even crazier. He's only given up seven batted balls, 95 miles per hour and above. Damn. Adam Mazur. That's nuts. 100 miles per hour and above.
And this year, he's seen 54 hitters and three batted balls like that.
That's crazy. Leading you in now to the Sajazy interview, you mentioned kind of the personality, and it checks out totally. Do you remember what day exactly you had this interview?
I could tell you right now. Because did this interview.
I want to do the numbers since that interview.
We did this interview on Friday, April 5th.
Since that interview, he is hitting 333, 390, 583. That's a 974 OPS, two home runs, and you also have three more doubles in that span. But if you start to like cut it down even more recently, his last seven games, he's hitting 385, and that's 10 for 26. You remember last year what happened after the trade, of course. So Jay-Z, when he gets hot, it's just different. And I think he's about to do that, where he's getting hot and he's really going to start rolling here. I want to talk about the defense real quick as we kick to the interview without spoiling it. What was your sense? Because, you know, I think there's been a lot of scouts are skeptical about just the value of the glove because he's not the best defender at shortstop, but he makes the plays. He's gotten a lot better and he's solid. And I think it's really underrated how versatile he is. What was your sense about like where how he feels about himself as a defender?
Yeah, so let's make this abundantly clear. Mason Wynn's been awesome to start the year. They don't need any shortstop help right now, especially when you got Brandon Crawford sitting on the bench. Like, they're good on that front. But it adds another element to his defensive versatility. I think they look at Sajazy as a guy that can become one of the better, if not the best, utility man in baseball. Like, they're probably looking at him in a similar light to what the Brewers hope they had with Luis Urias, a guy that can play third, short, and second. And he gets into it a little bit more in detail, but he said he feels more comfortable at short than he does at third at this point. And he played more third than short last year. He hardly played any short at all last year in Texas and in St. Louis, but he was playing a lot of third and second. And he said, I just grew up doing it. I grew up playing shortstop. Every professional second baseman grew up playing shortstop. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, that guy has not been a second baseman since he was 12 years old. So he said, I feel natural there. It's almost identical movements and the same process. You know, you just got to get the ball out a little bit quicker. And I have fun doing that. Third base was new movement for him. And he gets into this too. He soaked up so much info during big league spring training. You have an excellent third baseman to learn from there. So like, he's fine defensively. He's excited about being able to play all three.
Well, and it's funny because I think third base might be the long-term home. You know, Arenado, I don't know what their long-term plan is. He seems to be starting to slow down a little bit. So Jay-Z does have enough power there to carry that position, I think. I do think he can hit 20-plus, and he could grow into a good defender there. But I think it makes sense why the Cardinals targeted to Jay-Z, right? Because they love those versatile players like a Brandon Donovan, even a Tommy Edman. And I think now Sajazy is going to be the latest example of that. The offensive profile almost reminds me a little bit more of like a Spencer Steer, where he's going to give you like a little bit of everything. And Steer, if he could have played a passable shortstop, would be even more valuable. I think Sajazy, you could look at a Spencer Steer type of offensive profile with even more defensive utility It's a really damn good player. So I loved hearing the defensive aspect of it because that opens up a lot more doors for him. You know what the offense is going to look like, I think. I think it's pretty easy to tell that this guy's just going to hit. So hearing just the defensive development and the versatility that he's working on and just being a sponge with these future Hall of Famers around him has me really excited about what he's going to do. And I think, you know, sounds like from a mental perspective, he's pretty close to ready. Is that like one of your takeaways as well?
Yeah. I mean, you'll hear him say it right away, but like one of the things that he took away from spring training too, because we talked about a week after he got to Memphis and he said, yeah, like the biggest thing that I took away is that I'm really not far off. And I'm like, yeah, agreed, man. So it was awesome to hear that. It feels like he is mentally ready. Evan Carter is one of his best friends. Like Evan Carter and him were like this coming through the Rangers organization. And, you know, he'll get into it too. Like, you know, he's got a bunch of buddies that are up there and he's like, they're my age, man. And they're succeeding at the major league level. Like, I think I can do that too. And I think so as well. I will say, you think third base is the long-term home. I actually think we see a reshuffling to make space for Sajezi full-time at second. I could see him getting up there playing second. I think Gorman, it's clearly like not really working as the everyday second baseman for Gorman. And I know that Edmund's hurt, but I mean, it's not working for Victor Scott up there, unfortunately. And we love Victor Scott. Like it sucks to see, but he may need minor league time. He wasn't ready. Yeah. And we're fully, you know, convinced of that now, but it feels like, and Alec Burleson's really occupying the DH spot right now. He's got a 600 OPS. Why not put Sajezi at second, take the defensive pressure off Gorman, have him DH, put Edmund in center when he comes back. And it feels like Dylan Carlson's been a sitting duck anyways. Like you might as well just commit to Edmund full-time in center and move off the Carlson experiment.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense short term. That probably is the most likely scenario. I wonder what they do 2 years, 3 years from now, even 2 years when there's potentially no more Arenado. How do they shuffle it around? Gorman at third may make even more sense, and it'll be interesting to see how they go about that. But the good news is they have options because of that versatility. This is a fun organization if they start to skew towards the young side and focus on that. And I think they may have no choice based on how things go this year. So we'll see. But I'm excited about some of these other guys getting more opportunities. Herrera, Scott, once he's ready. Of course, he just had to fly up there in a pinch. Tink Hentz has thrown well. Roby threw well the other day. They've got some young talent coming up. And so Jay-Z's one of them, number two prospect in the system for us, number 60th overall in baseball. Here is Cardinals prospect Thomas Ajayi.
Today's show is brought to you by Game Time. We've all found ourselves in a situation somewhat similar to this. You see that there's a great pitching matchup that you're willing to drive an hour or two for, or a concert that popped up out of nowhere. So you go scanning for tickets, and there's roadblocks galore. No good deals, nothing at the last minute, list goes on. Let's fix that for you. New friend of the show is Game Time. Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, view from your seat, and the lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. I've had a great time with Game Time. We've got a rainout in Indy. Pacers are playing that night. I can pop into the app. I can choose a seat. I can view the vantage point from that seat, and I can grab the ticket within 60 seconds. I'm also looking at some concerts coming to Indianapolis during day games or maybe even off days. I might rip them, and I'll use Game Time. Best part is you can even get minor league tickets. I've seen the Fort Wayne Tin Caps on Game Time. I've seen the Indianapolis Indians on Game Time. Use Game Time for last minute deals. Save up to 60% off buying last minute for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, list goes on. Yes, you get a lowest price guarantee and panoramic seat views, but I personally love the all-in pricing the most. I use this toggle feature so you know exactly what you're getting into and you're not hit with the classic, holy smokes, how many fees are there feeling at checkout? Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code JUSTBASEBALL for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem the code JUSTBASEBALL, all caps, one word, JUSTBASEBALL, for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. All right, we're chatting with Cardinals, I guess, shortstop prospect, second base prospect, infield prospect, Thomas Ajayi. Mentioned to you right before we started recording, happy early birthday. Turned 22 next week. But, man, I want to start with 21 in AAA. The last 8 months for you, 9 months, have probably been a total whirlwind with the Montgomery deal going down and you coming over to the Cardinals organization, that crazy experience in Springfield, and then getting up to AAA at 21 years old. So first and foremost, has life slowed down for you at all?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think it slowed down pretty quickly just because getting traded was a little crazy, but then it's just the same game, you know, and all the guys are really cool and the Cardinals have been good, and just the organization has been really good, making it really easy to kind of get back to my routine and get back to things, get back to normal really quick, it seems like. And so it's slowed down, and it's just baseball, so it's been really fun.
Probably felt like a pretty, you know, normal off season for you. I know you're a California guy. Do you go back to California for the off seasons?
Yes. Yeah. In the past off seasons, yeah, I've mostly been in California.
You know, you're a guy that I'm curious what kind of clicked for you last year, right? Because, you know, and we'll kind of get back and go back to the origin story and who you grew up watching and all that. But, you know, I'm curious, last year, all of a sudden, man, it was like 326 homers. You had almost 40 doubles. You drove in 110. And, you know, you see you out on the field and you see like, hey, second baseman's not supposed to drive in 110 runs. What do you feel like, you know, really turned for you offensively in 2023?
You know, just I think just reps, to be honest, you know, and just more understanding of what I'm doing. I had somebody that I hit with that helped me a lot. And then just really just reps, you know. I thought I had a pretty good year in 2022. And just kind of trying to build off that and just getting more knowledge of understanding what I'm doing. And just seeing this pitching, you know, it was my third year.
Yeah.
So it's just getting used to it even more and understanding kind of what their repertoires are and then just putting good swings on balls. And, you know, I also helped having the people I hit behind in Frisco.
Yeah.
A lot of really good on base guys, like Evan Carter and Luis Angel Acuña.
Yep.
And then I got here, and then I'm hitting behind Mike Antico and Victor Scott, who get on base and steal a bunch. So I'm hitting with runners in scoring position a lot, so that helps for sure. And yeah, just trying to focus on my cage work and try to hit the ball hard consistently and just help the team, you know.
Yeah, something that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people noticed was you really don't put the ball on the ground much. And I'm curious, you know, you say try to hit the ball hard. Is elevating the baseball a premier focus for you? How have you kind of worked on elevating? Because you see the ground ball rate, and it's like, you know, 35%. It's a really low ground ball rate.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it all just comes down for me to get in a good position to hit. If I'm in a good position to hit and the pitch is in the zone, it doesn't really matter what pitch it is or how hard it is. I think when I'm in the right position, I'm able to do damage, you know.
Yeah.
And honestly, the ground ball thing, that's just always been – I've been able to get the ball in the air since maybe my junior year of high school. I just had a knack for getting the ball, you know, in the air and on my good swings.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's not really something that I think about trying to elevate or trying to not. I'm just trying to get in a good position to hit, and then I know that would yield, you know, line drives and doubles and maybe a couple homers as well. So
I want to go back to the growing up days and the Carlsbad High School days, because, you know, you were a fifth round pick in 2020, and that's a weird one. I always like asking the 2020 draft guys what their process was like, because I'm sure, I mean, there you had to hit a point in March or April where it was like, what am I doing, where am I going, that kind of thing. But you were committed to Pepperdine. You ended up signing with Texas after being taken in the fifth round. What was that whole deal like for you, like trying to decide how you navigate those weird, weird waters?
Yeah, I'm not sure why, but I was pretty stress-free at the time. I was just, school was canceled and it was COVID. And so I was just I was loving life, just working out and hitting, and that's kind of what I fell in love with, is just constantly just working, and hitting, and just training is, you know, what I really fell in love with. So that was just a lot of fun for me.
Yeah.
And then I never expected to, you know, I played JV my sophomore year, freshman baseball my freshman year. Wow. So I never really, I committed right after my senior season. I was never really like expecting, I guess. I don't think I really thought about it, getting drafted out of high school. And then it just, things seemed to lie. I asked my agent, like, do you think I'm getting drafted? But he's like, I don't know, man. Like, it's pretty up in the air. And it was kind of only the Rangers were on me. And then they offer, I think, oh, my agent said, hey, we're going to ask for this. Did they counter with this, like, a little less? Are you going to take it? And I said, no, I want to go to school. I called him back 15 minutes later. I was like, you know what? I want to take that.
Yeah.
You know, this is a once-in-a-life opportunity.
Yeah.
Once in a lifetime, you know? And he said, and then that's exactly what happened. They asked for this. They counted this. He's like, do you want to take it? I said, yes, let's go. And, yeah, it was crazy, man. It was a whirlwind, but I was fine with wherever. I just wanted to play, you know? So, but it was definitely a dream come true and very exciting.
Well, I'm sure 2020, when you were, you know, you mentioned you just had the opportunity to work out and hit and really not have any other external factors going on, that might have simplified how you thought about that whole process, right? It's like, hey, I really love playing baseball. I love making this my everyday thing. Might as well just do that and prioritize it, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, school is, there's no school, no homework. So I was like,
great.
Let's just do this. And then pro ball is that same thing. It's just, I've never been much of a school guy anyway, so
yeah,
it was a good decision, I think, and I've really loved it, and just making baseball my main priority. And yeah. So yeah,
growing up, I know your high school produced Troy Gloss, Brady Anderson. Who were your favorite players growing up? Were you an Angels guy, Dodgers guy, and who were you really, you know, locked in on, said, you know, I want to be like that when I was 12-13 years old?
I was definitely I was a Yankees fan when I was really young. My parents are from New York. And then towards my high school years, more of a Padres fan. But I liked a whole bunch of people. I didn't really have one. I went to an Angel game once, and I was a huge Yankees fan. When I was really little, I went to an Angel game, and I got to talk to Derek Jeter and talk to Curtis Granderson and Robinson Cano. And Curtis Granderson was really friendly, so he became, you know, one of my favorites. And then, you know, as I grew a little older, I grew more and more respect for Derek Jeter and just how amazing of a guy he was and how amazing of a player and just a leader he was. So he became, you know, one of my favorites. And then I just liked watching good hitting, you know, and just baseball, you know. I just really, especially to this day, I just like watching guys play the game and just see what's going on. It's just fun for me. So
yeah, so I get a couple different answers to this, but it sounds like you are, you know, a baseball nut. Do you go home and just ingest baseball? Are you watching the West Coast big league games, or are you a guy that likes putting baseball away when you get home from the ballpark, do something else, you wake up, I mean, hell, you want to play video games, go for a walk, or are you somebody that when you're in it for these 6 months, you want to be in it and you're really only thinking about baseball?
Yeah, you know, it's been different throughout these couple of years. You know, I try to, like, the last couple of years, I was kind of away from, like, I'd try to, not necessarily try to get away from it, but I'd watch some. I would just watch the playoffs, and I'd go in and out, you know. But then, you know, this year I've been watching a lot, and it's just, it's fun now because there's so many people that I know that, you know, I faced this guy. Oh, this is my buddy. My friend knows him, you know? So it's pretty cool just to kind of, I was talking with, Jared Young. That's what he was saying. Like, once you're around for so long, it's like big league games are so much more fun to watch because you're like, I remember that guy. I remember facing him in high A. Or like, oh, that's my buddy. It's just, people move around so much, and you get to spend so much different time, you know. So, and then especially the Cardinals, like being in big league camp, those were my teammates in spring, you know. So it's so cool to like watch these guys and root for them after having conversations with them and like hearing about their like just what they liked, just hearing about themselves, and then you see them on TV, you're like, come on, like,
yeah.
So that's pretty cool too, and that aspect, and yeah, I think you gotta really love it just because it's so such a big part of our lives, and yeah, it definitely it consumes me for sure. It's in a good way though. So,
what are your kind of main takeaways from this past big league camp? Because obviously that is a unique experience. This is your first full season with the Cardinals, and I mean, you show up to Jupiter and you're around guys like Goldie and Arenado and, you know, even a guy like Tommy Edman when we want to talk versatility. And I'm going to ask you about, you know, the infield versatility in a moment. But even the younger guys, right, like Mason Winn, you know, Jordan Walker, guys like that. What did you kind of take away from seeing the vets do their thing and, you know, really being enveloped in Cardinal baseball on Jupiter for an entire March?
Yeah, so definitely I think the biggest thing was that I'm really not that far off. That I know my what I'm trying to do, and I know myself pretty well, like in terms of what I thought, like, you know, you're in the minor leagues, you still think it's so far, but then being there and like seeing these guys work and seeing their work, you know, like Goldie and Contreras, their work is just, that's the other thing. That's the other takeaway, is how focused and detail-oriented their work is and just how consistent they are in the cage and how much thought and meaning they put behind every swing. But definitely then just seeing the in terms of performance and what guys are thinking, and I'm like, this is just the same game. You know, I'm really not that far off. You know, it's not – I'm sure there's a jump, and I'm sure it's, you know, a bit more difficult in the big leagues. It definitely is. Right. For sure, but it's comparable at least, you know what I mean? And I've kind of had the view that it's like not for a while, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Just because it seems like a fairy tale, you know? So that's one of my bigger takeaways. And then, you know, especially guys like Mason and Jordan Walker, like they're my age, you know? And they're just like, they're talking about the same stuff that I talk, you know? So that's pretty cool. And it's really cool to see those guys. Like, I really like seeing young guys have success in the big leagues just because, you know, with all that being said, I know how hard it's got to be. I don't know how hard it is because I haven't been there yet, but for sure looks like a different beast. So seeing them perform well is also really cool. And yeah.
It sounds like you're talking intent a little bit with Arenado and with Goldie and Wilson, how they kind of put in the work offensively. And that's a word I hear a lot from pitchers is, you know, intent with each pitch. Like, talked with Jared Jones last year, and he said, I want to have intent. I want to, you know, treat every pitch like its own unique thing. And obviously he's working on sequencing and all that, but at the end of the day, he has to have full commitment to what he's about to do in that split second. And, you know, has your definition of intent and kind of how you work on intent in the cage changed over the last, I don't know, year, 2 years in Pro Bowl?
Oh, for sure. Definitely changed last year. You know, you don't always have it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm still learning for sure. And I'm still trying to always trying to work towards that good position of the good position, getting ready to hit and being in the right positions. But definitely, you know, before that I was just in a cage swinging.
Yeah.
I didn't really have a thought process and still sometimes, you know, I have intent, and sometimes it could be really bad, but the thing is like, just keep working towards something, you know? So that's a little different with them, especially because you see that those guys are like really working towards a certain feeling they want or a certain ball flight, but they're working hard to get there. And then you could see how quick they get there.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's what I said about being pretty close. Like so that's changed in my work for sure.
Gotcha.
You know, in high A, I'll just in there like, let's just go hit.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, so, but definitely last year and then this year, it's trying to like, okay, let's try to work. Like, let's work so we could get ready so that now in the game, we could trust our work, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely at times it's not going to be there and it's hard, but definitely the intent and you're working towards a goal is very helpful. So,
yeah. 100%. Last thing that I want to hit on with you, Thomas, is the defense, right? And you've played short every game that you've appeared in Memphis so far this year. But, you know, last year I was looking at, you know, where you were playing in Frisco. And it was like, you know, X amount of games at second, X amount of games at third. And then it was only like sporadic shortstop. I think you played like 80 innings at short there. So what's learning shortstop been like for you? And is there a learning process or is it something that came naturally to you? I assume you did it a lot in high school too.
Yeah, it's not a whole bunch, not like nothing insane learning, I don't think. Just I feel pretty natural, I feel pretty comfortable there just because I've played there my whole life. So I think there's more of a process learning third. And then you know, I played short and second my entire life, so it's a little better and a little easier, and just applying what I've worked at short the past couple of years, even though I haven't played there, and just, you know, just working. There's definitely a couple of things that maybe I need to work on and need to learn. Always things you need to learn, but it's been good though. You know, it's the same principles I think apply for the most part, and just talking to people and talking to infield guys, and you know, they've helped a lot. And
yeah, I'm curious what the what kind of the learning process has been like at third base. Is it as simple as, wow, guys are hitting it 105 at my face now, or is it something else? You know, hey, I gotta speed up my movements because you gotta be quick at short too.
Yeah, third, it's more so it's part of that, and it's just making a decision of go back. They call it working the X. So it's like I'm gonna work forward and back, like it's at third, it's less square. You watch Arenado and he never fields the ball with two hands, and he's always, I mean, you can't see me, but yeah, in this position opening up to pick which way you want to, if you could go back or if you could go forward. And that's kind of the thing at third, I think, where it's like you have to make your decision really quick of what hop you want to pick.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. At short and second, you still pick your hop, but you have a little more time and you want to get your feet going. You know, at third, you have a little more time to throw the guy out. So you're picking your spots, and the ball's hit so hard, it's on you. So you got to think fast.
Yeah.
And I was the guy who always kind of got in front of the ball. And at third, sometimes, you know, you don't want to get in front of the ball, and you want to create a better hop by taking a step back or taking a step forward. You know, so that was definitely a learning thing at third, and just everywhere. You know, you watch a lot of guys, really good fielders, and you see it's like a dance, and you'll see them not always square up the ball, and
yeah,
and just the hop kind of dictates where they go, and they just flow with it.
Yeah.
And that's I had an opportunity to talk with Ozzie Smith over spring training. That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
and that's all he said. He said it's just energy. Object in motion stays in motion, and he's like, so we're just dancing with it. Wherever the ball goes, we are just becoming part of the energy, and we're redirecting it. We don't want to change anything. So, you know, just that, and that was pretty cool, and yeah, that made a lot of sense to me.
I love that. That's something that you're going to remember for the rest of your playing career, and I'm sure like the rest of your life.
Probably
it's like
the rest of my life, for yeah, sure.
100. It's like Ozzie Smith told me this, and that, you know, changed the way that I think about, you know, shortstop defensively and really the infield defensively. Thomas Ajayi, this has been awesome. Last one for you, and it's hard to pinpoint, I'm sure, but you're knocking on the door. We're talking right outside of AAA clubhouse. You know, you're right there to something that everybody in your shoes dreams of, and that's a major league debut. If you could ID like one thing that you feel like you want to keep bettering yourself at before you get to the big leagues, what is that one thing? Do you have a thing in mind?
Definitely staying in the zone. Definitely swinging at pitches in the zone. I tend to expand just because I think I could touch everything, you know. And definitely that. I think that could get exposed in the big leagues. So definitely just try to stay in the zone. And but other than that, you know, just build off everything I've been working on, and like I said, I feel like I'm working in the right direction. And, you know, day to day, I'm working in the right direction. But, like, if that keeps compiling up, that's kind of where I want to get to, you know? I'm looking at it, the long picture. If I keep working like this, I keep working, maybe I don't get it today, maybe I don't get it tomorrow. Maybe it takes a year for me to really know everything, but I'm working towards that, and I think that's the biggest thing, is just trying to keep on getting better for the years to come, and then the rest, you know, dictates itself, and then it's not up to me at that point.
Yeah. Thomas, this has been awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.